Hello out there in Radio Land. This is Chuck Shaden with Recollections at 50. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as we tune in to a few nostalgic moments from a half century of Those Were the Days programs. Whenever Ken Alexander brought up a newspaper from the collection in his basement, he often skimmed over the headlines and pointed out some other interesting items, such as the front page chuckle on the Chicago Daily News, or a single panel cartoon in the Tribune, or the movie listings in the Herald American. In 1948, he came up with a copy of the Sun-Times, and he immediately pointed out a front page article that had significance to a lot of readers.
Big story here. Fare increase on the CTA.
Oh, really?
Second fare increase says, with the cost of strap hanging going up after midnight Monday, L and streetcar riders were warned a further fare boost might be necessary if a wage raise should be given. Negotiations now are going on. The 1 cent general fare boost was necessary, Chicago Transit Authority officials said, to meet a deficit resulting from fewer riders, higher operating costs, and the large modernization program. 1 cent increase in the CTA fare.
And it's a big newspaper story. Huh?
Yeah. At the same time, rail commuters could look forward to paying their higher fares next week. The Burlington's boost goes into effect Sunday, the Illinois Central's Tuesday, and the Northwestern's probably that same day. The railroad strike also is set to begin Tuesday. So, bad news on the commuting scene.
Oh, commuter front. Strap hangers?
Yeah.
That's what it says, strap hangers.
Yeah,
right?
They had the straps on
now,
the
streetcars. Now, I must confess, I have not been on public transportation for an awful long time. And you use public transportation.
I use the Union Pacific, the train. Uh-huh. When I worked at WNIB, I used to take the train. Then I would take the Milwaukee Avenue 56 bus over to the radio station.
Uh-huh. Do they have straps? Do they still have straps on the public transportation?
I don't. They have a pole running across horizontally up there.
You can lift straps up, hold your hand on the pole. No straps.
Huh? I don't think so, no.
Yeah, but that's what they used to call strap hangers. You can hang on to the strap, right?
Yeah, there's leather strap hanging.
You remember the old, there are no streetcars around anymore, but no. I love the old Chicago surface lines.
Oh, yes.
Streetcars used to run down the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
The tracks, there used to be safety islands in the middle of the street, and you would wait on the safety island, and that from that safety island you could get onto the streetcar.
Well, on some streets they did, but not on all of them.
On many streets, though.
Yeah, in Madison they did, I think.
Yeah.
But some streets you just get out there in traffic and wait for the streetcar to come. Well, when the streetcar came along, then you'd walk out there in traffic.
Yeah.
Well,
it was pretty dangerous there.
Yeah.
But you would get on the, you would generally get on the back of the streetcar and exit from the front of the streetcar.
Yeah. You could exit from the back if you wanted to, but you get on the back, that's where the conductor was.
And that's where you would pay.
You would punch your ticket.
You would not get on the streetcar in the front.
No. No.
Yeah, because you would have to pay. And then there was a signal, right? Yeah, there's a trolley. They had the trolley up on the line.
Yeah, there's a trolley.
And then you would pay, and then when it was clear, there was no one else trying to get on or get off in the back, the conductor would pull a little strap or something, right, and go click click.
Yes, twice. Click click
click
like
click,
that.
And that would be the signal. There would be a
the motorman.
There would be a cord, so to speak, running through the car, and that would be the signal.
Yeah.
To the motorman.
Yeah.
And the motorman, if he was impatient, he's ready to go, and he was waiting for the strap.
Yeah.
I mean, waiting for the conductor to ding ding.
Mm-hmm.
He would hit a
gong. They call it
a gong or a clanger with his
foot.
Bing 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 bing. You know, are you ready? Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Right.
That's right. And then you're ding and click click.
Yeah.
The motorman usually would, if you hear that ding, that bell up above every stop, ding, ding, it would get on his nerves. So he would take some old transfers and stick them up there by the clapper so it wouldn't go ding, ding, or just click, click.
Yeah, he'd just hear that a little bit. Now, the motorman would also hit that clanger if he was trying to get traffic to move in front of him, too.
Yeah, used
like a horn.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Also, when the conductor had somebody on the back platform who wanted to get off at the next stop, he would click this thing up for the motorman once. Click, which means stop at the next corner. Uh-huh.
Couldn't you, if you were a passenger, couldn't you reach up and signal
No, I never
to
saw
a motorman?
Never saw
clink,
that
clink.
Done.
Well, I thought you could do that.
I thought you could do that.
If you were saying, I want to get off at the next stop or something like
Never
that.
Never saw that done. You would. I don't think you could reach up that high because.
But I thought there was a line for passengers to announce.
No, I never knew anything like that.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have been doing that.
You shouldn't.
You know the best spot? The best spot for a passenger on the streetcar?
I know where I used to stand.
Yeah, me too.
Right behind the motorman.
Right behind the motorman?
Yeah, yeah.
No, right next to the motorman.
Next to the motorman? Right at the window.
Oh, right, and he usually had the window down. In good weather, the window was down.
To his left, then.
To his left.
Oh, I see.
As he was facing the traffic. And you would stand up there. A room for two kids, shoulder to shoulder. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Dan McGuire and me, we'd be up there like that. And he would be going along, and the wind would come at your face. And then, you know, you would sometimes talk to the motorman, although there was a sign up there.
Motorman must not talk to passengers.
Right.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And then when you got to the end of the line, if you ever got to the end of the line, what would happen?
Oh, well, they would, the streetcar would, they wouldn't turn around. They would just reverse everything, and they'd go backward. They'd have to, the motorman would get up where the conductor was, and the conductor would get up where the motorman was, and they'd switch things around, turn the seats the other way.
Right. And yeah, the wicker seats when they're moved back and forth. Right?
Yeah, and then they would just go backward, which was now forward. They'd switch onto another track, of course.
Well, you could drive the streetcar from either side, either end of it, right?
Yeah, he would take this big lever, the controller bar, he would take that with him to the other end.
That's right.
And he could operate the car from there.
And sometimes they had, one of them had to get out and change the power line
to the
overhead, line to the overhead electricity.
Sure, they have to do that, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I used to love riding those red Rockets. I didn't care much for the Green Hornets. They were more modern.
Well, they were kind of slick, weren't they?
Faster and
they were only
quieter.
On a few streets. Clark Street, I think.
Madison had them, McClark.
Yeah,
But I prefer the noisy. You could get on while the thing was still moving because the door was open on the back platform, and you could get off where the running start, get off while the thing was still moving before it came to a stop. Oh, yeah, that's a lot of fun.
And the streetcars, you could lower the windows.
the passenger
windows, although they were very hard to operate. They were difficult to operate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you could over, and then there would be a little sign on there someplace that do not put head or arms outside of window.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, the two streetcars would be passing in the middle of the street, so that was a lot of noise, too.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Did you ever collect transfers from the motorman?
No, I never made a collection of them. I would get one when needed, but then I'd give it to the next.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why you got rid of it right away.
Yeah.
You like to get rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
Danny and I used to collect transfers all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get to the end of the line and they were out. He'd punch up a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
The transfer used to be a place that had the route in red on the transfer.
Yeah.
And there's a slight map on there.
Uh-huh, that's right.
And he would punch it wherever you got on, somewhere along that line.
He would punch also the time.
Yeah.
And if you made a stop over someplace, came back 2 hours later to get to transfer, no, this transfer is late, you can't use
it. That's right. Well, they had the face of a clock printed on there, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And the street would be printed in red.
Yeah.
Irving Park Road or Madison Street or something like that. And then we lost the streetcars.
Yeah,
and had to take the buses.
They paved over all the tracks. These are little like cobblestones in the street, and the tracks in between the cobblestones.
Some of the buses worked with the power lines.
Oh yeah, electric buses. Everyone on Central Avenue, I know, used to take that to school.
Oh yes.
But they didn't go backward or forward. They had to go forward all the time. They couldn't.
Buses couldn't. Yeah.
There was only the one.
There would be a turnaround at the end of the line.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they're just a driver. He had to act as conductor and driver both. You know.
There was a. We had a motorman living on our street, and he would always walk up to the bus, or the streetcar, and he had a little black bag with him. Like a doctor had a little valise with him.
Yeah.
And in that black bag, he had his transfer punch and a supply of transfers that he maybe picked up the night before or the day before, and probably a sandwich or something like that. Yeah. I always thought that was a pretty good job.
You know, when I was in high school, for a while, I aspired someday to be a motorman on the Chicago Surface Lines. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, and these fellows usually had the same schedule.
Yeah,
they. I know they switched once in a while, but they usually had the same route.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Well, I guess our time is up. No,
yeah,
we got
I think
more
it is.
Stuff
no,
on the
that's
newspaper.
All the time
no.
we have.
I like to talk about the streetcars. I remember.
Oh, I
remember fondly going to all places. We used to take them downtown. We took them to the movies all the time.
Oh,
took them to
sure.
the YMCA.
I would take it to high school. And
yeah. Oh, of course. I used to take the bus. I used to get on the Irving Park bus at Ottawa Avenue, and it would take it down to Nina, going east,
mm-hmm.
and then we transferred.
Yeah.
To the streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, you were supposed to transfer to the streetcar at Nina, which was two blocks west of Narragansett.
Yeah.
And then we had to get off at Narragansett to start going south on Narragansett to just south of Belmont Avenue for Steinmetz High School.
Oh, yeah.
But we usually walked,
mm-hmm.
at least in the good weather, we'd walk. Or if a streetcar wasn't there, we'd walk
mm-hmm.
to get the bus or the streetcar on Narragansett
mm-hmm.
and take it over to Steinmetz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was okay. And we knew the bus driver so well, or the streetcar driver
sure.
on Irving Park so well. Well, it was a bus driver on Irving Park. He would say when he knew that when I was on the bus, or with Dan McGuire and I were on the bus, and they used to call out the streets.
Oh, sure.
Oleander,
mm-hmm.
Oriole, Ottawa. We lived on Ottawa. He'd mm-hmm. say, Ottawa, best street
oh,
in town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ottawa, best yeah. street in town.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Ah, those were the days, Portland.
Yeah, they were.
Well, every listener who ever rode a streetcar or the elevated could identify with our pleasure as we remembered those days. I remember another fun occasion on our program. It was a June day in 1999. I was broadcasting from our studio in the Museum of Broadcast Communications. I decided to take the microphone to talk to some people in our studio audience.
You know, we always have a lot of guests in our studio here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where Those Were the Days program comes. And many people who talk to me about our program say, you know, when I come down here, I'm very much surprised, because I thought everybody who listens to this program is 50 or 60 or 70 or 100 years old. And I come down and I see a lot of young people in the audience listening to your program. And if they're in the audience, they must be tuning in. Well, that's true. I've learned that over the years. When I first started broadcasting our Those Were the Days program 29 years ago, I thought maybe the only people who would listen would be people who remembered the old broadcast. But I've discovered over all of these years that there are a lot of people who never had the opportunity to hear these programs when they were first broadcast, and they listen regularly and enjoy being introduced to the old shows. And since we had a couple of minutes today, I found a couple in the audience that are young people, and I thought I would stop. I asked them if we could talk a little bit, and they said sure. They'd tell me a little bit about how they got involved listening to old-time radio. So we have, first of all,
Edward Berditsky.
Edward, you're from where?
Chicago.
Okay, and this is?
Jalene? From Chicago.
From Chicago, okay. You're together here today, right? Okay, well now, this is delicate, but it's not so delicate if I ask a younger person this than I ask an older person this. Edward, how old are you?
28.
28, and Jalene?
27.
27, okay. So when you were born, radio was long gone as far as the stuff that we know here. Well, Edward, how did you find us?
Well, I was doing math homework, I think it was in sixth grade, and just flipping through the channels on the AM dial. I'm not sure why it was set to the AM dial, but found you on the air at 8 o'clock in the evening on WBBM 780, and ever since then could not do math homework without listening to those radio shows.
See how, now that's, I told my mother years ago when I was a kid that I was productive when I listened to the radio. It really was for me. Now, Jalene, how about you?
I just remember driving in the car with my family from when we would come home from my grandmother's house in the evening, and my dad put it on, and so I started listening to it then, and I really liked it. Never stopped.
Well, that's great. So you stayed with us while we were on WBBM, and then you followed us over here to our Saturday afternoon spot, right? Well, now, what about the two of you? Would you meet in school or what?
Well, we were actually at a cafe, and Jalene had said some phrase, and sorry, I can't remember it, but it sounded just like Gracie Allen. And I said something to her, you sound just like Gracie, and lo and behold, she actually knew who Gracie Allen was and knew what I was talking about. And we were both surprised that we both liked these old radio shows. We thought we were the only two strange young people that separately listen to these, and somewhat these old-time radio shows brought us together, and we've been dating for a while based on these, I guess, old-time radio shows.
Well, that's the first old-time radio started the dating process for you two. Well, now, do you listen together sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes, especially Saturdays.
Okay, well, what brings you down here today?
Well, since old-time radio shows first brought us together, I was hoping it would help us bring us a little closer together. And I was hoping that since we're on the air, Jolene would be a little embarrassed to say no when I say that I would be extremely honored if she would be my wife.
She is gasping now. Jolene is gasping as he's down on his knee and he has a diamond engagement ring in his hand. And she just said,
yes.
Go ahead. And the couple is kissing now. And this is a first. This is a first for our Those Were the Days program. Well, congratulations to both of you, and I wish you both a lot of happiness. He told me about this. We had this all set up. I feel a little like Ralph Edwards or Art Linkletter right now. But I want to wish you both the best of luck.
Okay.
Thank you.
She said yes now, and there's about 50,000 people out there
who
are witness to all this stuff, okay?
Wow. Can we get a tape of it?
Can you get a tape of it?
I'm sure there's about
The audio transcript fee, you can sit down.
Thank you.
I want to see you put that ring on her finger. He's taken it from the box. He's put the ring on her finger.
The question, does it fit?
There's a little nervousness here, right? From all of us. Congratulations. Best wishes to you both.
That was on June 12th, 1999. Now, the following year, on our 30th anniversary broadcast, I decided to replay that engagement segment as one of our previous broadcast highlights. And the engaged couple turned up again.
With us right now is the happy couple. This is Edward Breditsky and Jolene Mittleman. And congratulations. You have not tied the knot yet, right?
No, not yet.
No,
it's
thank
coming
you.
Up.
It's coming up. Now, I called them a couple of weeks ago because they were engaged on our show in June of last year. And these are the thousands now, or the 2,000s. So I said, well, I'm not going to play this tape. If this isn't still going, I don't know whether it's going to be or not. So I talked to Jolene, and she said, oh, yes, yes. So you have set the date?
Yes, we have set a date. And, in fact, we were hoping that you would show up. We have an invitation for you right here. You and
oh, gee. Oh, it's got an old radio on the invitation. How do you like that? Well. When's the date?
It's Sunday in August.
Which means you can make it. It's not a Saturday.
And the date is?
August 13th.
August 13th. Oh, that's my wife's birthday. Oh. So you'll have a cake?
I think so.
Well, we want to wish you the best of luck. And I'm very privileged that you chose our program to pop the question. And these are two people who were not living. They were not born yet when I went on the air. Can you imagine that? Say goodbye to them, audience. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
That was from April 29, 2000. And my wife and I did indeed attend their wedding on August 13 as we saw them tie the knot. Finally, quite a few years later, on June 27, 2009, on my final program as host of Those Were the Days, I was naturally reminiscing about my radio days, and again I told about the old-time radio romance that blossomed into a wedding, and I discovered that the couple was again in our audience.
You know, there's another thing that happened on one of our programs a number of years ago at the Cultural Center. A young man called me and said, I've been going out with this girl for a while, and in just general conversation, after a number of dates, I made some comment. He used a line from an old radio show. And she says, "How do you know that line?" She says, "I know that line." And it turns out, while they were dating, they never got around to talking about the fact that each one of them independently were listening to "Those Were the Days." And so he said to me, "I want to give my girlfriend a ring, and I'd like to do it on your show. Could I do that?" Oh, I thought, that's pretty nice. I'm a hopeless romantic. And so I said, "Okay, I'll tell you what, I'll make some excuse to come down into the audience on that particular day for whatever reason. I'll make up something, and I'll talk to you, and I'll say, 'Why are you here, and what is this,' and all that." And his girlfriend, Jolene, was going to be with him. And on that show, he asked her to marry him. And she was astonished. She was amazed. She was surprised. And she said yes. And when they got married, they were thoughtful enough to send me and my wife an invitation to their wedding. And we went to the wedding. It was a beautiful wedding, and they had a big band there playing, all the big band sound. I mean, these are the kind of weddings that I like, you know. And they're here today, Jolene and Edward and their two children. You're sitting in the back. You want to stand up and let us see your nice family? Here they are. Here they are. Jolene and Edward. Haley and Nora, right? Haley and Nora. Congratulations and thank you. That, you know, I talk about highlights of my broadcast life. That was one of them. I felt like I was hosting the bride and groom show from the old radio days. That was really very nice.
And our continued good wishes to Edward and Jolene and Haley and Nora. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Recollections at 50. There's more to come in the weeks to come. This is Chuck Shaden. Thanks for listening.